Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. And we have a very special guest today, Charles Clemens. And the story that he's written about is a true story. It's about a Mexican-American and what his life was like. The book is titled Harpo, War Survivor, Basketball Wizard. And this is about this young man whose nickname was Harpo and how he was able to overcome some pretty brutal obstacles in his life. Charles, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Donna. Great to be on the air.
Well, it's a delight having you as a guest. Charles, you're a man that decided you were going to write a story about someone that you had known years ago. And so often we have stories that are written about people, you know, they're about themselves, but this is an especially poignant one because it goes into a time frame and involves the Mexican culture. What caused you to decide that you were going to write about this particular young man who had been in your life? Why was it so important that you tell his story?
Well, I tell you, my brother was in the hospital and he was dying. And all the relatives and the family went to a restaurant. And my niece, who lives in Austin, was doing some psychotherapy work with the people that were producing Friday Night Lights, which is a TV series and was a movie. And she was talking about how it was an underdog story. And I told her, I said, you know, there was a bigger underdog story that happened right in your own high school. And she said, well, tell me about it. And so I took center stage, and by the time I finished, everyone was crying, including me. It turns out that the story is so poignant and so tender that it just couldn't resist not being written.
Now, what is the original name of Harpo?
Oh, it's Adolfo Celaya.
Adolfo Celaya.
Uh-huh.
Tell us a little bit about his family, because his life was pretty rough.
Yeah, it's an underdog story from beginning to end. When he entered grade school, he didn't speak a word of English, even though his family had lived in America for generations. His family was poverty-stricken. They had no money. And they had no money to even provide him with a haircut, except once a year he got a haircut. And that's how he got his name, because his hair was curly and sort of was like Harpo Marx.
Harpo Marx, yeah.
His mother left him when he was 11, and his father became extremely brutal and mean to him and beat him frequently. And he hated school and was an inveterate dropout. He was a truant that they had to keep dragging back to school. So all around, it was a very negative childhood.
Now, he was 6 when he started into the school in your area of
that's
the country.
That's right.
And what community was that again?
At Florence, Arizona. It's a town nobody ever saw and nobody ever heard of.
Florence, Arizona. Now, here he is today, and I'm going to jump back and forth in time
okay.
a little bit here. Today, he's a big hero. I mean,
oh, by all means. He is a bona fide American hero.
Yes. So here we start off with him as a young kid, not being able to speak English, family moving into Florence, Arizona. He's being dragged to school. He hates it. Yet, he really had what. And what year was this when he started? How old was he? I mean, he was 6, but what year was it when he started?
Well, he was born in 1927.
Okay, so 27. So here we are. We're looking at the 1930s. So it's a whole different world, a whole different environment than, you know, what we would even think about today. I mean, it's a whole different, thing. So how in the world did you become involved with him? I've got a picture of you in front of me where you've got a basketball. And you, this is a sixth grade class that this is a photo of, and it's, let's see, five kids here?
Yeah.
So tell us, Florence wasn't a very exciting town. How in the world did you ever end up in Florence?
My father had a cattle operation in Florence, Arizona, and I grew up in that little town, and it was predominantly Mexican. They had, it was 70% Mexican-American. And I was crazy about basketball. As a matter of fact, I really wasn't aware of Harpo because he left town after he graduated from the eighth grade with a promise that he'd never go back to school. He hated it so much. But by the time he came back to school, I was 13 when he led the little team on a rampage in the Arizona State basketball championships, and I was just smitten by the guy. He was, I think he was the only idol that I ever had. I worshiped the guy. As a matter of fact, every kid in town did.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend up in Los Angeles, a literary agent. He told me that he thought that Harpo was the Latino's answer to Martin Luther King. That's how serious he took this this Harpo's personages and his heroism.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Now, basketball.
Right.
Harpo got into it, and he really liked basketball.
Well, he was good at everything. He was probably a better baseball player than he was a basketball player, but he was one of those terribly gifted athletes. He could do anything.
Wow. Amazing.
Yes.
Now, with him, when he was chosen to play junior high basketball as a fifth grader, now that's quite a statement.
Right.
You said here in your book that a student almost always had to be at least a sixth grader to participate at that level. I mean, he was so exceptional. His father, though, was something else.
He was, but I think through it all, he and his father really did truly love each other, and they did have a bond.
Mm-hmm.
But his father came from a long line of people that beat their kids. I don't know why, but it just was sort of that way, and it's probably still going on.
Well, probably not with Harpo, but
No.
It's you're making a point here that many times dependent on a culture environment that you come from, and that can be ethnic, it can also be just environmental.
Right.
That certain patterns will be there, and somewhere along the line has to, somebody has to break it.
Right.
And I think Harpo probably did break it in his own life.
Right.
But I don't, his father, like you said, as you very nicely portrayed in your book, they eventually were able to communicate, but it was, he stopped beating on him when Harpo got big.
Right, about the time he was 14 or 15 is when he put the belt away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then he could sit, because you've got a picture of Harpo with his dad at 14.
Right.
And goodness, they were the same height.
Yeah.
And he's
of
a lot younger and a lot stronger. So dad realized he had to pull it off. Now, how did he get into semi-pro basketball? I mean, this is someone, he's 15 years old. He's being offered a semi-pro positioning.
Well, he was employed at the Armory Recreation Center in Tucson, and he loved basketball, and he used to practice by himself. And one day, a big guy named Rudy was watching him, and he says, "Do you want to play one-on-one?" Well, Harpo took him to the barn shed and beat him, even though this guy Rudy was like 6'2" and Harpo was 5'8". There's no way you could stop him because he was so quick and smooth and graceful. I mean, he was just a tremendous athlete. And so Rudy was playing on a semi-pro basketball team, and most of the men in the community were off fighting World War II. So he said, you want to play for my team, which is Convair? And he said, of course. And that brings it out to brings us up to the point that he was like 17 years old,
mm-hmm.
and everybody was fighting for their country. And he got a letter from his friend saying, why don't you join the Navy? And so he got permission from his dad at the age of 17, and he joined the Navy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he had to have the slip signed.
That's right.
Heard of stories of young people at that time, of course, we're talking about the 40s, and where they were able to go off and become soldiers, and some of them were as young as 15 years of age.
Right.
And they signed the papers, and they were able to go in. We were a country at war, and so that's what everybody, every young, healthy male was supposed to do. That was
that's
just
right.
the expectation. So he went in it, but right off the bat, Harpo had never really experienced discrimination, but when he went into the Navy, it was big time. And that is something that, you know, you think of the remark, you have it in here. One of the remarks he was asked most often was, why don't you go back to the hole in Mexico you crawled out of? The racism was really extreme. Now, he had some friends, but it's a shock, I think, when you have never really known racism. And I've interviewed other people. I've interviewed African Americans and people of different nationalities, and maybe their environments, they didn't even know that such a thing existed. And yet they go into something entirely different, like the military. And in some instances, like with Harpo, they go, whoa, I didn't realize that, you know, being Mexican or Chinese would make a difference.
He told me it seemed to him that every redneck from Texas and Oklahoma had enlisted in the Navy and was on his ship. And he says they all had a chip on their shoulder against the Mexicans. And in the racism even went up the chain of command, the lieutenants mm-hmm. and the captains. I mean, the people were terribly unenlightened back at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen like that today. It may be more subtle. But, I mean, he got in trouble with lieutenants that were just out-and-out racists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I've heard these stories before.
Have you?
And I think one branch of the service that really didn't happen in was the Marines. And that was because when you were in training, they didn't care what color you were, where you came from. You were going to go to war, and you better learn how to survive. So by the time they finished training you, you'd look at each other and just say, how do you feel? Well, I don't feel so hot. You know, I mean, it was a leveling field.
That's right.
It was a leveling field. I'm not saying that that was perfect, but it's interesting how changes have evolved because there's been a demand for the change. But, again, it's different times. People coming from certain parts of the country, they were raised, indoctrinated a certain way. And what are you going to know? You don't know anything different.
Right.
You know, you're not even going to think differently because it's just not been in your experience. That's not a requirement. So your story brings out a lot of interesting points. Now, he received his assignment on the USS Indianapolis.
Right.
And that was a ship that is a significant part of history. She was built in 1932, and he and another young man, Santos, became very, very good
friends. Santos Pena.
Yes, very good friend.
Right.
And their story is going to be quite a profound one. Now, the Indianapolis had been built in 1932.
Yeah.
They had been at sea for 5 weeks.
Right.
What happened?
The mission was to deliver key parts of the atomic bomb to Tinian Island, right off the coast of Japan. And after the mission was accomplished, they set sail heading for Manila in the Philippines. And there was an ambitious submarine captain with the Japanese that saw them and hit them direct with two torpedoes. And within 12 minutes, the ship sank with 1,200 men on board. 300 men were killed instantly. The radio facilities were extinguished. They couldn't radio anyone. And 900 men hit the ocean at dark. And when the sun came up, there was a community of 900 men floating for miles within each other. And they all assumed that that somebody had radioed and that help would be on the way immediately. And the first day went by and nothing happened. And then the second day went by and nothing happened. And then men started to kill themselves by drinking seawater. And there were also sharks that were eating the men, especially if they were thrashing about dying from drinking seawater. And it was a terrible ordeal. So what happened is this incident is one of the worst and most profound naval disasters in Navy history. And what happened was after 5 days of no food and no water, by accident, they were discovered by a Navy pilot who was flying over and looking for submarines. And he saw an oil slick. And he dove down closer and saw heads in the water and realized it was Americans. And he radioed people, and that's how they were rescued. But Harpo had a terrible time, as did they all. But while he was bobbing up and down in the ocean for 5 days, he had a secret, and the secret was he had a medallion, a St. Anthony's medallion, that he put inside his mouth and he sucked on for 5 days, and he said it abated the thirst. And I said, well, was there a spiritual angle to that? And he said, I don't know, but he said, I named my first son Anthony.
Let me share something with you, because
sure.
When I read that in the book, and of course, when the ship was hit, he and his friend Santos were side by side, and one of the things that they had received, one of the points of training they had received, is if there was a certain kind of an impact, that they were safe for jumping over the side of the ship. And so it's dark and they couldn't see anything, and you vividly describe it. It's quite dramatic. He thought he had caused the death of his friend Santos.
Right.
And that just preyed on his mind the whole time he was in the water, because he called out to Santos and there was no response. And of course it's dark, screams of dying men. It is a horrific situation, explosions, 12 minutes, the ship's gone down. And you have to wait until light comes to be able to see anything. I mean, you're in this pitch dark. But this that you wrote about with a medal, among the Aborigines of Australia, they use a stone. They'll say, pick up a pebble, a small pebble, put it in your mouth, and suck on it, because often they'd go through areas of country where there was no water. And that would enable you to keep your thirst abated, like he did with that metal in his mouth.
Interesting.
So that is just something when I read it, bingo, that memory clip came back into my head. And it is something that the Aborigines have used for thousands of years, to be able to survive without water. And it's just a fascinating thing. So what he did, and I'm sure he swallowed little bit of salt water, so you know, a little bit of hydration that was going on there, but that enabled him to not over intake salt water where it would make him ill. That's really what he did. Now, what I found so amazing is that there was such an awareness of each of the men that were in the water, of the others. And there was a Dr. Hayes that you talked about, and he said he was so grateful when one man found a floating cork ring attached to a long rope, and 200 men floating in the water, this rope encircled them, pulling them together, and it gave them a sense of security because they felt like they couldn't be swept away by
a
current, because they just sleep an exhausted sleep. I mean, they just would be out of it. This way, they were not concerned that they were going to end up floating away in some current and not see anybody else.
Exactly.
very, very, very profound description. Now, there were a lot of things that went on behind the scenes before they were picked up. There was a lot of miscommunication because this ship, the USS Indianapolis, was supposed to be carrying some of the component parts for Fat Boy, which was going to be...
No, they had already dropped those off.
Oh, they had already dropped those off.
At the island, yeah.
Okay.
That was their mission.
That was a mission to drop it off, so this was after they had dropped
right.
it off. So this ship was involved in some pretty secretive stuff. But there was, at that time when we think about it, nobody had cell phones. There wasn't satellite communication. We are dealing with, in our minds today, a very primitive form of communication.
Right.
Where did the big, to put it in our English today, screw up occur?
The snafu occurred in the harbor, in Manila Harbor, when after the first day somebody said, well, where's the Indianapolis? And they said, well, it's a secret mission, so it's not my job. And we'll forget about it. And that's what happened. It just went up the chain of command, and nobody bothered to inquire.
Mm-hmm.
They just forgot about the ship.
Mm-hmm.
It was a total Navy snafu. And so after this ordeal was all over, naturally what they did is they blamed it on the captain. And they had a court-martial on him in typical bureaucratic fashion. But,
now, these men that were rescued.
Right.
Obviously, he was one of them. Now, his friend Santos did survive. He found his friend was still alive. But Harpo got into trouble. He got into trouble right after, you know, just a short time. 317 survivors were shipped to Guam.
Yeah.
And he...
Well, what happened is they took him to Manila, and they were treated like kings for about 2 weeks. And then they got on a ship heading back to San Diego and the States. And after about the first day at sea, a lieutenant asked Harpo to move some boxes around. Well, he had hurt his knee and his back was hurt. And so he moved the boxes around, and he was the only one the lieutenant asked to move. So the next day, the lieutenant did the same thing. And it was like a make-work deal where you move the boxes over there, then you move them back where they were. And Harpo says, well, how come nobody else is doing this? He says, are you defying an order? And they took him downstairs, and he bowed his neck, and he got what they call a captain's mass, which is a step below a court-martial, and they put him in the brig. So when they landed in San Diego, everyone else was getting a hero's welcome, and they marched down Broadway in San Diego to a parade. And Harpo was in a wire cage being fed only bread and water for 5 more days. And he was totally despondent. And for some reason, he blamed himself for this. And he felt really guilty about it. And he felt like he had let himself down and the whole world down. And he became, for the first time in his life, extremely depressed. And he tried to rig up a system whereby he could hang himself. And he got about halfway through the process, and he realized, he says, I don't want to hang myself. He said, I want to hang some rednecks. So what happened is one of the guards took sympathy on him and called a father, a priest, in to counsel Harpo. And the priest came in and bought him some cookies. He smuggled in some cookies, and they talked for like 12 hours, and he made it through that way. And he said he can't remember the priest's name, but he said he was an old Irishman, and he said he loved that man.
Now, Harpo ends up getting out of the service.
Right.
And he ends up going back to Florence.
Right.
And
no, he went back to Tucson.
Or Tucson, excuse me.
Right.
Then he has to go back to school because he realizes if he doesn't.
Well, what happened is he found a bar. He couldn't sleep at night because he had
post-traumatic
stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And he found a bar that would serve him even though he was only 18 years old if he was in a uniform. So he became an instant alcoholic. He sat in this bar and talked to this old bartender all day long, every day, and stumbled back to his house dead drunk every day. Well, they had an ambitious young basketball coach in Florence High who found out about Adolfo, Harpo Celaya, and that he was one hell of a basketball player. And he went down to see him, and he found out that he was in a bar, so he went into the bar, and he made an agreement with Harpo that he'd come back to school. Well, Harpo was in a blackout. He didn't remember it. So a week went by, and the football coach came back. This time, he brought two of the biggest football players with him. Of course, they were friends of Harpo. So basically what they did is they kidnapped him, pure and simple. And they swept him off his feet, put him in the van, and took him back to school and enrolled him in high school at the age of 18 years old as a freshman, and with the idea that he was going to play basketball.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, with that, how did basketball end up creating him into the hero?
Well, the first year that he was back was 1946, and he still weighed only about 120 pounds. He wasn't back to his normal strength. He was still ill from his ordeal at sea. But by the time 1947 rolled around, nobody really expected much from the little team from Florence. They only had six players, and they had to recruit four other guys just so they could practice. But the six players were all Mexican-Americans, and they were all small and all little, and most of them were related. Four of them were Celayas. And what happened is they started the season, and they won a couple of games, and people started to look around and say, hey, this is a pretty good team. Then about the third game out of the season, Harpo scored 40 points at the half. And the halves were only 10 minutes long. Well, I couldn't score 40 points if you locked me in a gym by myself all day long. But he did it. That's how talented he was. Well, by hook or by crook, they made it through the season, and they went in and faced the state champions from the year before, which was Mesa, and they beat them. So Florence was included in the state championship in Tucson, which included 16 elite teams. Now, every team in the tournament had a player of over 6'5". They had some big kids. Even back then, basketball was a big man's game. So Florence faced Safford, their first game out of the gate. And Safford had two guys that were 6'5", another guy that was 6'4". They were fast, they were clever, they were well-coached, and they'd played together forever. And they were tournament champions. Florence beat them by 2 points. And the next game, they played Glendale, which was a force unto itself. And this was quite a stirring moment, because at halftime, Florence was behind 13 points. And the coach, took him in at halftime and gave him a little lecture and says, what we've got to do is run these guys and fast break them. Well, Florence beat them by 14 points. So it was just a tremendous turnaround. Now, as it so happened, the entire state of Arizona started to embrace these six little Mexican kids from Florence. And the wires and the telephone lines started to light up, and the newspaper writers started to write big columns about them. And the whole state became like Gopher fans because, well, like they say, everybody loves an underdog. And I don't really want to ruin the story, Donna, because the last part of the story gets to be pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. But let me just make a little comment because we're almost out of time.
Okay.
You make a statement in your book, and I've always said on my show, people make a difference. An individual can make a difference. And these six boys that had come up through a very rough time in life, and Harpo was the one that you wrote about, all of them came from what we call a dirt-poor environment, been mistreated by the white establishment, but not only did they win victory, but in today's world, nobody even thinks about race in flooring. And these six boys, so many years ago, especially Harpo, really made a difference, because Harpo has a special story about how he decided it wasn't being Mexican, it was being an American counted, and he didn't believe in racial discrimination, and he even went through separation. Mexican people were upset with him because of his attitude. Americans were upset with him because he was Mexican. I mean, it was very interesting, but he stood his ground. And today, you just told me before we went on the air, he now is in the Arizona Basketball Hall of Fame.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you, your book is delightful. Charles Clemens, it is a story that I think is truly an American story. When I say that, it means it doesn't make any difference what your cultural background is. What makes the difference is, do you have the heart? Are you willing to walk the walk? And if you are, you have an opportunity to be successful, and Harpo is a good example of that. Do you have a website on your story?
Yes, I do. It's
HarpoHero.com. HarpoHero.com.
Or you can just go on Amazon.com and dial in Harpo War Survivor, and it'll pop up.
Great. Charles, we're out of time. Thanks ever so much.
Thank you, Donna.
It's been a delight having you as a guest.
It was fun.
And I'm so glad that you took time to write a story about a Mexican-American that is finally receiving some acknowledgement about what his life represented.
It's about time.
Yes, it is, sir. It really is. This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget, go to HarpoHero.com, and we're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a minute. Don't go away.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.DelphiInternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and her website is www.DelphiInternational.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Hey, telephone lines are open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Or you can call in directly at 530-876-9916. Now, if you're a first-time listener to the show or you want to be a first-time caller, hey, give me a buzz. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question after I give you my perceptions for you, a question about anything that you like. It's sweet, simple, easy, and it's usually a lot of fun, too. So give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. All right, I want to also let you know that I've got some broadcasts. I have just been so fortunate. There are people that have been inviting me to be a guest on their shows. So if you would like to tune in at these different times. Let me tell you who they are and what the stations are. Monique Chapman, and we're going to be doing a two-hour program. Her program is walkingwithspirit.org, walkingwithspirit.org. It's on achieveradio.com. Please go to achieveradio.com or Walking with Spirit, and you can hire it on either places. Also, I am, and that is going to be on May 12th. Then, on May 26th, I'm going to be talking with Katie Romero Speller. She is the host here on BBS of Spiritual Hollywood. And I'm going to be on the air with her from 6 until 7. By the way, with Monique, that's from 5 until 7. So with Katie, right here on BBS, I am going to be doing an interview with her. And then on Monday, May 11th, these times are a little wacky here, I'm going to be on Goddess Radio on uswebtalkradio.com, and that'll be from 4 to 5, somewhere in there, 4, 4.30, 5 o'clock, and we'll be on the air, and I'll be chatting, and I'll give you more information about that as to when that is going to be aired, because we are going to be doing it, and I'm not quite sure what the time frame is going to be for that. But those are three interviews that are coming up for me, and it's really, it's just very, very nice. It's a delight that people have wanted to have me as a guest on their shows, and I'm so appreciative of these hosts, and I want to be sure that I mention them. Donna Sebo here. Do you think some wacky laws exist? Oh, my goodness. It's really hard to believe some of the things that go on in this world of ours. Well, we have got a guest that's going to be coming up next month who is an attorney, and he has put out a book publication, but I've got to share a couple of things with you that in reviewing his book, and as you know, I review about 400 to 600 pieces of material a year, but you wonder why these laws are allowed to even stay on the book. Why don't old laws that have no validity anymore just get erased? We keep adding laws. And adding laws, and adding laws, and adding laws. And what used to be called, I am assuming they still are called this, blue laws, that were maybe put in the 1800s, they still can be used because they've never been removed. I wonder if anyone has ever considered having some kind of a revision process where we absolutely erase some of this old stuff. Vermont. God help those of you who are living in Vermont if you are female. Because you know, according to the law in Vermont, you cannot get false teeth without your husband's permission. I'm not joking. These are laws that are actually on the books. And then in Virginia, they would have so many people in jail, they probably would have to lock up three-quarters of the state. Because there is an actual law that any person not being married who voluntarily shall have sexual intercourse with any other person shall be guilty of fornication punishable as a class 4 misdemeanor. That's on the books, folks. Yeah. So, statement is, if you don't want to go to jail, don't have sex until you're married. Boy, have times changed. So, you know, these are some of the wacky things that go on. And you just, it's just amazing to me. And believe it or not, sometimes in court cases, some of these old laws will be pulled up and used against people. And they are hundreds of years old. They shouldn't even be there. I mean, it's really ridiculous. By the way, there is something about, let's see, I think it is in the state of Florida. This is really, really amazing. This is a court case. I've got to share this with you because this is just really something. This is in February 2004. There was a maid at a particular inn, the Hampton Inn, in fact, at the Miami airport, who filed a lawsuit claiming she got sick after cleaning up a room where five wild animals were kept. Now, Busch Gardens was doing some publicity for their theme park in Tampa, and as part of their campaign, Maya, a spider monkey, Bob, an alligator, Tango, a macaw, and Zuri and Rufio, lemurs, were kept in a room. And this maid said she made contact with hair, feathers, urine, and feces while cleaning the rooms, and that the animal exposure left her with physical and emotional problems, including skin lesions throughout her body, headaches, and depression. She also testified that two men kidnapped her, took her to a cemetery, and threatened her if she did not drop the lawsuit. Now, this went into court in Florida, and the opposing sides were so disagreeable, they couldn't agree on anything. The judge tried to find numerous ways to arrange things which would suit both sides, and after finding no acceptable solution, the judge came up with a unique manner in which to proceed. To pick the location for a deposition, the judge ordered representatives from both parties to play a game of rock, scissors, paper. The winner got to pick the location. Okay. All right. Yes, indeedy. Makes you wonder. Well, Jeff Isaac, we're going to be having him on next month, and his book is The Wacky World of Law. So I had to share a couple things out of that because it is absolutely amazing. So what do we do? You know, I don't know. We probably need to have someone make a proposition to make a listing. If in your state you've got some of those wacky laws, what do you think you could do to get rid of these silly things? Why don't they just have an automatic eraser every 50 years? I don't know. Hard thing to say. You just don't understand some of the processes sometimes. Meanwhile, let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And that's worldwide. Anybody can call in from anywhere on that toll-free number or 530-876-9916. Now, we're going to have Joan Bunny tomorrow, sexy in your 60s. She is so much fun. She's just a delight. Next week, we've got a great lineup of guests. We're going to be talking with Eldon Taylor, Mind Programming. This is really good information. It's so important for us to be aware of what's going on in our environment. Do you believe that subliminal messages can affect your thinking, how you respond to things? Advertising is very much aware of it. So we're going to find out about things you need to be alert to. And Healing the Rift, Bridging the Gap Between Science and Spirituality, Leo Kim is going to be my guest. This is a wonderful, wonderful publication, and I know you'll enjoy it. Sound Healing with Jonathan Goldman. This man is known around the world for his expertise, and we're going to be playing some of his track that is just absolutely amazing. He has a CD about dolphins and and the sound of the ocean. It is mesmerizing. It is one of the most relaxing things you could ever listen to. So we're going to be talking with Jonathan next Wednesday. The psychic housewife, Lorraine Rowe, we're going to be learning about her and her experiences. And if you're in business, well, if you are a consumer, which all of us are, you're going to want to know about how the consumer can make a difference. And if you're in business, how you need to listen. When customers talk, peace. Scott Gross is going to be my guest. We have got some real good things to share with you next week, and I invite you to tell your friends and also realize that if you miss a show, all you have to do is go to the archives here at bbsradio.com, and you'll be able to listen to them whenever you want. That is the great thing about computer technology today. We can have a show. You don't have to miss any of it. All you have to do is just connect right in with bbsradio.com, and you've got that show there for your listening convenience. And all of my guest postings are also there, so when you go in and you're listening to my show, you can check out the guests that are going to be upcoming and the little brief write-up that I put regarding same. Well, we're going to be taking a break for just a moment. When we come back, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Do you want to live forever? Well, I've got some information about what is happening in the world today regarding lifespan and some other little tidbits and points that you might find intriguing, as I did. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756 or 530-876-9916. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Siebel. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Siebel's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756 or 530-876-9916. Somebody had a story here that said a bunch of us took a friend, an older lady, out to lunch to celebrate her birthday. When the waitress came to take our order, one of the women said to her, "This is a special occasion. Elsie is 92 years old today." The waitress made 7 instant enemies and 1 friend by asking, "Which one is Elsie?" Oh, boy, you can imagine how that went over. Well, speaking of age, would you want to live forever? Well, there was a global survey that was done by the Reader's Digest, and they found people really were not interested in living forever. They said that, in general, most people were just fine, and I'm quoting directly from the article, with their limited self-life or shelf life here on Earth. And when they asked people of all ages, the younger group of people will say, "We don't want to live forever." In fact, more than 50% of those 45 and under in 7 countries, including the United States, said that they didn't want to live forever. And Brazilian youth said with 74% wanted to have no expiration date. But in the Philippines, they got some surprises. They found in the Philippines, everyone over 45 wants life everlasting. And in China, not one single older person surveyed wanted to live forever. Interesting perspective, isn't it? And you can go to readersdigest.com/worldquestions, and they have a longevity desire-o-meter. And the majority of people said no thanks, they didn't want to live forever. 36% in Russia said that they did. Or absolutely, you know, they didn't particularly find it exciting overall. But when you started getting into the Philippines, India, and Brazil, again, they were the ones that said, "Yep, we'd like to live a lot longer." So just a little bit of trivia there of information. Now, do you like shrimp? Well, I found out about a recipe for Thai shrimp, and I really like Thai food. And there's just, it's such a wonderful thing to be able to fix. And of course, if you have fixed any Asian food, you know that it can be really easy to put it all together, but it's the preparation you have to do first, because your food has to go in so fast. So you want to get all your ingredients set out first. But here is a recipe for Thai shrimp. Really fast, really easy. And it's not got a whole bunch of calories in it, but it's got a whopping amount of flavor. So let me give you the recipe here. You've got that pad of paper and pencil handy, or pen. You're going to need a cup of chicken broth, And if you're concerned about salt, then have the reduced sodium chicken broth. You need a tablespoon of cornstarch. And again, you should have these all ready to go. In other words, have your measuring spoons out or put things in little containers so that everything's already measured out because it's boom, boom, boom when you're processing it. Tablespoon of cornstarch, 3 tablespoons of rice vinegar, 3 tablespoons of rice vinegar, 2 tablespoons of soy sauce, and if you don't like a lot of salt, then use the reduced sodium soy sauce, 2 tablespoons of water, 2 tablespoons of water, 1 to 2 tablespoons of Thai chili sauce. It depends on how much heat you like. Remember, less is better if you're fixing this for someone other than yourself, but if you like it real spicy, then go ahead and do whatever you want to do, but less is more when it comes to serving other people, and have extra chili sauce on the side. You need a tablespoon of minced fresh ginger root, tablespoon of minced fresh ginger root, 1 teaspoon of minced garlic, teaspoon of minced garlic, 1 pound of uncooked medium shrimp, of course you want them peeled and deveined, and then 2 teaspoons of sesame oil, 1 can of water-packed artichoke hearts, you want to rinse them, drain them, and chop them up, and then 3 tablespoons of chopped green onions, 1 head of bok choy, trimmed and chopped. That's such good cabbage. I just love that. And you may want to serve it with hot rice or maybe some hot rice noodles. That's your choice. You may just want to serve it over some shredded vegetable of some kind. Choice is yours. Now, this is how fast and easy it is. You take, put in a small bowl your chicken broth, your cornstarch, and you stir it until it's silky smooth. Then you add in the vinegar, the soy sauce, the water, your chili sauce, your ginger, and garlic. All of that's mixed together, and that's all put in that smaller bowl set aside. And you want a large kitchen skillet or a wok, and then you want to stir fry your shrimp that's cooked up really fast until they're pink. Remove and keep them warm. And then you want to stir your soy sauce mixture in the small bowl. You want to take and add that to your hot skillet, bring it to a boil, and you cook it. It's going to only take about 2 minutes. It's going to thicken up on you. Then you add your artichokes, your onion, and then your bok choy. And you reduce your heat. You cover it and let it cook for 5 minutes until the bok choy is wilted. Then you return your shrimp to the pan, heat it through, and if you want, serve it with rice. It's only 214 calories a serving. This serves 4 people. Just really, really good. So there's just so many things you could do with a recipe like this. You might want to use a little bit of curry powder. You might want to add a little coconut milk. There's just so many different things that you could do with this particular recipe. It's really nice. It's flavorful, but it is fast and easy. And as I said, with Asian dishes, if you have all of your ingredients cleaned, prepared, ready to go, all chopped up, everything needs to be done, it's just zip, 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 and it's finished. But that's what makes it so nice when you cook them. Donna Sebo here. Well, we're just about out of time. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about being sexy in your 60s. So if you're 35, you can look forward to this because Joan Bunny is going to give you some facts that will enable you to keep your figures and also feel great about that time of your life when you reach it. Donna Sebo here. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Spring's here, folks. Enjoy. There's just so much to do and so much to look forward to. Have a fabulous time wherever you are. We'll be back here, same time, same place. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.